following is rated R. It contains violence, adult language, nudity, and adult content.
Good evening, everybody, and it is 8:30 on the 14th of October, 2018. This is the Walking Dead online viewing party for Season 9, Episode 2. I'm co-host Casey Shapiro, coming to you on blogtalkradio.com via NDB Media. Tonight's show contains spoilers up through the last episode and anything from current AMC official promo materials. So welcome to Season 9, Episode 2 of The Walking Dead. We have 6 more episodes of the front half, with Season 9, Episode 8 airing Thanksgiving Sunday. Typically, we start this show about a half hour before the new episode airs live each week, with recap from the previous episode and discussion of what is to come tonight. At 9 p.m., we'll go dark or mute and watch the new episode together and give episode ratings from 1 to 10 and commentary during the commercial breaks. We will also give our listeners trivia on the show as well as the cast and crew, including bios, birthdays, and more. Our show is spoiler and comic free. Please don't discuss either spoilers or the comics in the chat or on the air. We prefer our discussions, reactions, and comments to be just about what we know from the show presented. I'm going to check in the chat room and see if we have anybody yet. Apologies, I was a little late posting the link because I had other obligations during the day, so I was a little behind in getting this stood up, but hopefully people will notice that I just posted the link and join us before we go dark. So, feel free to call in to speak with the hosts at 914-338-0314 anytime this evening, especially between 8:30 and 9 EDT. If you call during the live show, you will be screened and muted until the commercial break, where we can chat on the air. If the phones are not really your thing, then feel free to join us in our live chat room, where you will be able to listen to the show real time, as well as download the episode after the fact. And we post the links for that on our Facebook page for this show and on my personal Twitter. If you're unable to join us in real time this evening, you can still go to each episode link later and download the broadcast as an MP3 podcast for later listening. Click on the cloud-shaped white icon at the top right of the page. I'm going to check the chat room again real quick. Still quiet, so we'll go ahead and continue. Episode 2 is called The Bridge. The official AMC synopsis is, the communities join forces to restore a bridge that will facilitate communication and trade. Someone is gravely injured at the construction site. And then we have additional synopses. This first one is from undeadwalking.com, and it is written by Sarah Beth Pollock, who is one of their regular writers about this particular show. And she says, sorry, the season 9 premiere of The Walking Dead heralded a bold new era for the show. After 2 seasons spent battling Negan and the Saviors, the show had shifted focus to the communities and the people who lived there. The remaining original characters, Rick, Daryl, and Carol, have come back together. Maggie made some big moves as a leader of the Hilltop, but the old dangers are still present. The second episode of the new season returns focus to the washed-out bridge. One thing that the season premiere showed us is that there is quite some distance spanning the different communities, so a bridge can make the difference between a day's journey and several days' journey. Episode description that officially I've already given you, skipping that. Working on the bridge isn't just about making travel easier. It's also about bringing everyone together. The downfall to having lots of people spread out across multiple communities is that it's hard to bring everyone together. The bridge does that. However, bringing together people from all of the communities, Alexandria, the Hilltop, the Kingdom, Oceanside, and the Sanctuary, makes it so that people who don't get along are forced to work together. Despite the passage of time, there is still tension between the groups, and with a shortage of food that's not likely to go away. The Sanctuary is dependent upon Rick for protection and supplies, and Rick is forced to ask the other communities to step up and support their former enemies. It's a challenge, to say the least. Sorry about that. Let me go ahead and pull up the second extended synopsis. And while I'm doing that, I'm going to check the chat room, see how we're doing. Still alone for the moment, but we should be occupied very soon. So the second one is from comicbook.com, written by Brandon Davis, who is one of their regular writers about this show. And he says, official synopsis, skipping that part. Episode 9-2 will pick up more than a month after the events of the season 9 premiere. In the wake of Gregory's execution at the Hilltop, the communities are trying to come together to build a future, though the leadership styles are tending to clash from time to time. With Maggie and Rick's relationship somewhat strained, other characters are having to step up to keep things peaceful. Quote, I loved Andrew Lincoln and Laura Cohen and played that scene. This is worded very badly, and I can't really rescue it. Sorry. Angela Kang said, in reference to Rick and Maggie's Barrington House balcony scene from episode 9-1. Lauren brings such depth to Maggie, and again, it's another scene where two people who have been so close for years. Rick was really a mentor to Maggie, and she still thinks of him that way, but she's coming into her own as a leader. She's becoming the leader that Rick saw in her all this time. That means sometimes she has to tell him, I'm going to handle my business differently than you do, and we're going to have to be okay with each other. Maggie and Rick aren't the only close survivors who aren't seeing eye to eye. Rick and Daryl's relationship seems to be bending, but not breaking just yet. I think these two characters, they're brothers, and brothers don't always agree, Kang said. The beautiful thing about people who love each other so much is that they can just tell each other truth in a way that people who aren't as close might tiptoe around the truth. Norman and Andy playing these roles, they did such incredible, beautiful work. They rehearsed so much and just really nailed down every little emotional beat of that scene. They were excited to play it because they don't disrespect each other. It ends in a friendly way. There's pain, there's disagreement, there's different philosophies. That's true to life. That's true of families and friendships in America and all over the world. So, pardon me just a moment. Having a little bit of a something that wants to be a cough when it grows up. Now, hopefully it will stop bothering me so I can talk to you guys. All right, so I'm pulling up the third summary for this evening. And that is from fansided.com. And this is written by somebody I don't recognize. A new challenger appears. This is written by Nir Regev. Or Regev. I assume Regev. N-I-R. Last name R-E-G-E-V. The picture on the website indicates a gentleman. And I don't remember him having written for them before, so this will be a new take on something. So, he says, Rick Grimes has a vision of unity for the future, but all it takes is a single walker herd to remove the mask of civilized politeness on The Walking Dead. The saviors might be physically defeated, but the spirit of, quote, we are Negan, will not simply extinguish as Rick combines forces on his bridge project on The Walking Dead. The first sign of Sanctuary and the other communities forging a new path together, being lip service, arrived last episode with the spray-painted, quote, saviors save us, we're still Negan, end quote. Now with Sanctuary's resources dwindling, Maggie's getting tired of giving and giving without an equal return and hanging Gregory. And Rick's former 100% loyal troop gradually turning independent. It may be truly only a matter of time before the real Negan is recrowned king of these lands once more. The communities will only tolerate Rick's vision as long as the bond proves fruitful for all, and while he commands forces willing to make it a reality. If Daryl, Maggie, and others continually question Rick's fulfillment of Carl's dream, the plan will have no foundations to lean on. It will collapse, and Negan's ominous words about Rick, quote, just getting their world ready for me, will indeed reign true. The Walking Dead is at a key turning point without a common enemy to unite against any longer, merely living day-to-day life with every hungry hand straining each other's very well-being. Fruitless times also mean less patience, as Walking Dead fans saw with Gregory's hanging. In a different time, maybe Gregory gets one last chance away from Hilltop. I don't know. Nir, I got to disagree with you here. Gregory has been on his last chance for several seasons. He is it is amazing he didn't die sooner, because he's been that much of a douchebag. And clearly with the year and a half break between season 8 and season 9, he stayed that way. So, you know, I don't think so, but you're entitled to your opinion, which I will read to our listeners. Instead, Maggie finally had enough, going for a public execution to send a message. Though provoked, the public spectacle of it all really wasn't enormously different from Negan's own version of taking one out to deliver a message. Like the governor at Woodbury before him, there are unspoken deeds required to maintain great living conditions. Deeds the community members would like to turn a blind eye to, speak no evil, even if in truth aware of it. Moral credence does not win out when it comes to putting food on the table. The preview trailer for the latest Walking Dead episode shows water is a clearly limited resource, with young Henry being shoved. A fight breaks out on the bridge, while an unexpected walker herd swarms the bridge. It looks like every man and woman for themselves as civilization evaporates in seconds, with Daryl again clashing with Rick's view on not taking out the rest of Sanctuary's saviors, asking if they're on the same side. Is the bridge and the whole, quote, key to the future at risk of never seeing completion? A good idea on paper, not practical in reality. Double-check the chat room. Still alone. I'm going to refresh just to make sure that my flash is not throwing up and I'm not missing somebody. I'm going to go ahead, continue what I'm reading. Michonne attempts to convince Maggie to free her ambusher just because she needs a blacksmith to fix a broken plow. Whether Maggie obliges the request or not, there will come a time when Maggie tires of, quote, the greater good, and more than a hint was already seen when she turns Rick's request last episode. Also mentioning she wasn't a leader then, but she will be now before taking out Gregory. Michonne is looking to raise Hilltop's prowess and perhaps independence as a whole amongst the communities with the advantage of being a lead food producer. She also doesn't wish to cede more resources to Sanctuary, seeing not taking every resident member out as commendable enough. Even if she allows the blacksmith out, the course has already been set. There are only so many chances Maggie is willing to give. Rick has his work cut out for him to make others believe in what he's trying to build in the aftermath of a post-Negan dominant world. At least Carol seemingly still believes in what Rick is working for, with more concern for Ezekiel and Daryl's well-being than community geopolitics. Oh, and Joan has just joined us, so let me give her some welcoming applause. Thank you. We have to do our obligatory sound check because Flash. Oh, and speaking of Flash being flaky, I'm finally here in the chat room, Joan says, and we are glad for that. So you just missed my reading the extended summary articles that have the synopsis for tonight. So the next part that we're going to do, it's 8:43, so we got about 16, 17 minutes. We'll see if I can get through as much of this as possible. So tonight, we have the writers and directors. Tonight's episode was directed by Daisy Mayer and written by David Leslie Johnson. So profiles on them. Daisy von Schlerler Mayer, S-C-H-E-R-L-E-R, is from New York City. She has previously directed episodes for almost 40 shows, and by that I don't mean episodes, I mean 40 different independent shows, including Mad Men, Nurse Jackie, Orange is the New Black, and Halt and Catch Fire. She is a director and writer known for the movie Madeline from 98 and Party Girl from 95. She is married to David Carbonara, and they have two children. Tonight is her second work with anything in the Walking Dead franchise. David Leslie Johnson, who is our writer for tonight. So David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick, the name changed professionally in the spring of 2018, has been involved with The Walking Dead since 2011. He started as a writer for Season 2, Episode 5, Chupacabra, and has written 8 episodes of the show before tonight, ending with Season 8, Episode 15, Worth. He has been a consulting producer for the entirety of Season 8 and now into Season 9, which would be 16 episodes so far, including tonight. He began his career as a production assistant on Frank Darabont's The Shawshank Redemption, which was filmed on location in Johnson's hometown of Mansfield, Ohio, at the historic Mansfield Reformatory, where Johnson's great-grandfather had been a prison guard. He co-wrote the screenplay for the new Aquaman movie coming out in December 2018. Tonight is his 9th episode written for the Walking Dead franchise, the first being directing Season 4, Episode 6, Just in Case for Fear the Walking Dead. Oh, I beg your pardon. That line does not belong with David. That belongs to Daisy. Being that her second time working with the Walking Dead franchise, I pasted it to the wrong paragraph. I beg your pardon. So she directed Season 4, Episode 6, Just in Case, and tonight is her second time doing anything of that nature. And then we're just ending with David Leslie Johnson McGoldrick saying that tonight is his 9th episode written for the franchise. So I'm going to give them a little bit of applause and thank you for your work on the show, guys. All right, it's 8:46, so let's go ahead and move down to some other things that I can share with you guys. So trivia, a tiny bit of trivia about tonight's episode. This is the first appearance of Jed, who is a new Savior character. This episode marks Andrew Lincoln's 100th episode on the appearance on the show. As of this episode, Xander Berkeley, who played Gregory, is no longer listed under also starring due to his character's death in the previous episode. It will be the 117th episode of the series overall. And trivia about last week's episode, Season 9, Episode 1, A New Beginning. And these are just the trivia notes that I did not already have for you guys and cover last week. So, additional trivia. This is the 6th episode to share its name with a comic volume. And normally we don't discuss the comics, but I went ahead and included this one. That includes Days Gone By, Made to Suffer, This Sorrowful Life, Too Far Gone, and No Way Out, and Before What Comes After. Also, there are a couple of other episodes that share titles with a comic, but they're not about what the comic was about. They just share the title, and they're about different things. I did not include that part in this trivia. This episode, meaning last week, was dedicated to Scott Wilson due to his passing the day before the episode aired. Scott portrayed Herschel Green from Season 2 to Season 4. I'm going to double-check the chat room, see if anything was Joan needs to add. Oh, she was listening while trying to get into the chat. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Let me go ahead and go back to my notes and try to get some more to you. So the character Regina is shown using a cane to walk due to the gunshot wound she received during the war. And this means all-out war, you know, Season 8. When Daryl gives Carol the cigarette, she tells him it will kill him. She said the same thing to Molly in the episode The Same Boat, as well as Shelley Neudermeyer in JSS. Rick gaining celebrity status for ending the war against Negan is adapted from a comic. Not going to get into that. It's fine. Don't really care. I'm going to take the comic comments out. Yes. Okay. There's like the next four things. I didn't really catch that because the comment indicating it's a comic comment is at the end of the sentence. So I didn't really catch that. I'm going to delete those four things. They're not important. Okay. Non-comic comment. This episode marks the debut of a new animated opening credit sequence, which includes several Easter eggs from past seasons. I'm kind of hoping maybe somebody will do an article or a post about that and pull them out for me, because I don't know which ones they are. And last, the museum in Washington, D.C. isn't based on any real-world museum in D.C., and the scene itself was filmed at the Georgia State Capitol. My personal opinion is I beg to differ that it could be reasonably assumed to be the Smithsonian Natural History Museum, at least based on what they fetched out of it. It's not like I can factually prove anything, because these are generic items of, you know, agricultural history, basically. But, you know, being a Washington native and being very familiar with all of these, Smithsonians are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. And this kind of museum would naturally be one of them like that. And the kind of architecture that they're implying is very prominent in that area of D.C. where theoretically they were getting stuff. So this is my opinion on it. I totally think it's based on an existing museum. Okay. There are no goofs, errors, bloopers listed for episode one. So good job, guys. Not making any boo-boos. Double check the chat room. Joan seems to be good. So we'll continue. It's 8:50. Cast birthdays this week. We just have one. Vincent Michael Martella, who played Patrick, one of the teens at the prison in season four. His birthday is October 15th, and he is from Rochester, New York. So let's give him some happy birthday early applause. And thank you for your work on the show. All right, featured music from last episode, episode one. All I have is a note. What is the song Alden, who is a former savior, now lives at the hilltop, sings at Ken's funeral last episode? And he was singing the lyrics to The Last Rose of Summer, which was a poem by Irish poet Thomas Moore. It doesn't give any source material for the song version of that poem or where it comes from, but that's the song that's going on. Unaccounted for characters. We had an article on that last week, but honestly, they really weren't unaccounted for in the same way that we were talking about some characters on Fear. The only character that falls into that category for The Walking Dead Classic is Heath. I still have him listed, and in fact, there have been press releases that hint that Heath's fate is going to get addressed this season at some point. I do not have anything further than that, so we'll just keep an eye out for it. All right, Talking Dead tonight. Talking Dead guests for tonight are Caitlin Nakin, who plays Enid, Tom Payne, who plays Jesus or Paul, and Deborah Joy Winans. Winans is an actress best known for her role on Greenleaf, which is currently airing new episodes. She also has credits for Fragile World, Fighting the Battle, and Whitney. You remember last week I made mention that they were asking for comments to give to certain actors who were not on the couch last week. Caitlin was one. Tom was one. The third one not mentioned here was Pollyanna McIntosh, who plays Anne or Jadis. We're not sure why they were soliciting questions for her, but we are under the assumption that this has relevance to her appearance later. Okay, I have some discussion links. I held them last week. I'm going to continue to do so, because they are about upcoming characters, and I want to minimize the amount of spoilers. Even though these are official promo materials, they are not flagrant enough. So, and by flagrant, I mean such as comparable to Andrew Lincoln and Lauren Cohen leaving the show. Those are flagrant enough spoilers where I've gone ahead and talked about them. These right here are a little more close to the chest, so I'm not going to come into them yet. They are about upcoming character arcs and upcoming characters, and most of them are all related, so I'm just going to skip that part. Double check in the chat room, see how Joan is doing. Everything okay? Alrighty. So it is 8:54. We got 6 minutes. Let me go down to some other notes. So The Walking Dead Season 9 lead-up. I believe I've read this to you guys at least in part last week, and I'm going to keep reading it every week as we do a countdown. Last season brought the culmination of all-out war, which pitted Rick Grimes and his group of survivors against the saviors and the cunning leader, Negan. With Negan's life in his hands, Rick had a character-defining choice in front of him. By making the unilateral decision to spare Negan, Rick upheld the values of his late son, Carl, championed in order to build for the future, but created conflict within his group. Now we see our survivors a year and a half after the end of the war, rebuilding civilization under Rick's steadfast leadership. It is a time of relative peace among the communities as they work together, looking to the past to forge the future, but the world they knew is rapidly changing as man-made structures continue to degrade and nature takes over, changing the landscape and creating new challenges for our survivors. As time passes, the communities confront unexpected obstacles, danger, and of course walkers, but nothing quite prepares them for the formidable force they are about to encounter, which threatens the very idea of civilization that our survivors have worked so hard to build. So Here is our roster for the front half of season 9. Episode 1 we've done tonight, The Bridge. Next week, number 3 is Warning Signs. That's on October 21st. The Obliged is 4, and that's October 28th. What Comes After, November 4th. Episode 6 is Untitled. They're withholding the title, and I assume because it would be a spoiler. And that is November 11th. The episode 7 is Stradivarius, which incidentally will be directed by Michael Cudlitz. And that's on November 18th. And the mid-season finale is Evolution. And that will be written by tonight's writer, David Leslie Johnson. And that's on November 25th, Thanksgiving Sunday. So here's my thing. Based on how episode 6 is Untitled, Nicotero stepping in to direct number 5, and Michael Cudlitz is guest directing number 7, I strongly believe this will be a key plot device which leads to Rick's and Maggie's exits that we all know is coming. So that's when I think those are going to go down. So I have some other articles, interviews with the cast, but it's 8:56, so I'm actually not going to get into those at the moment. But what I will do is pull one of them up. I have 4 of them. Norman Reedus, who plays Daryl, Alana Masterson, who plays Tara, Pollyanna McIntosh, who's Jadis or Anne, and TV Guide talks to Greg Nicotero. So, Joan, if you have a preference to these, and I also have a thing about the new opening credits, so 5 articles. If you have a preference on any of those that you'd like to hear first, let me know. Otherwise, I will just randomly pull one up at the top and share that with you guys during the commercial breaks. So let me double check the chat room. So far, Joan's doing good. She's just not real chatty, but she's listening and a little tired. That's okay, sweetie. I understand completely. I actually did not get this episode written until literally the 11th hour, so I completely understand how that is. We are 3 minutes out, and we are about to hang Gregory, and I'm sure this will bite Maggie in the butt later. Joan doesn't really have a preference about article, so I'll just go ahead and start at the top, which is AMC releases brand new opening credits for season 9. That should probably be short, to be honest with you. So I'm going to go ahead and pull that up for the first commercial break, and then we can talk about the opening credits, because they've redone them extensively, and there's Easter eggs in there from previous seasons and other kinds of fun going on. So we'll talk about that. That's actually an AMC interview. They post articles on their official website. That's where I got that one from. And interestingly, I'm also going to note there has been an extreme lack of mention of any kind of webisodes this season, which I find super strange. Usually, by now what's happened is they will line it up with the Walking Dead Classic, and there will be 16 one-minute vignettes, at the end of which, when they culminate, it usually ends up being a plot device that merges in with fear. And I didn't really make a secret of the fact that I thought Red Machete was a disaster area, and they should have gone back to their established format because it was really working. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So I don't know if maybe that dawned on them, and so they may be tinkering still, I guess. Anyway, it is 8:59 and we are about to go dark. Gregory just got hung and we are having the preview of tonight's episode, so I'll go ahead and go dark. Jonas said maybe they didn't bother with the webisodes after Red Machete was not well received. Also possible, but I'm hoping they will go back to it because I did enjoy that mechanic and I want to see them do it again the old way. I'm going to go ahead and go dark, and I'll see you guys at the first commercial break. Okay, guys, it is 9:03, and they did a very, very short opener. So, we had just made a couple of comments in, you know, right before we started scoring and everything. Jonah said, finally back to Negan and his cell. And we know that that's how Rick's little conversation is going, because we've seen the extended cut in trailers. So I had commented, because we see a whole lot of Rick's people in these, like generally a tent city out in the woods. And how can they live in the woods like that? Because as a Virginia native, Virginia has so many bugs, especially near D.C. And then it had that rainstorm that took the bridge out and everything. So it has got to be horrible with mosquitoes and everything else. Joan has started with a 5.5 rating. I'm giving it a 5. I'm not really down on it. It's just that it was very short and very matter of fact. So there's not really much meat and potatoes to it. Joan has also commented, I know, right? They all become immune to mosquito bites or something. And she wavered on the extra 0.5 to kind of hesitated over the keyboard, so she may hover there for a bit. And that's certainly understandable. So it is 9:05, and we're still in commercials, so I may mosey over to the article I was going to read to you guys. And oh, they're doing something about Masters of Horror or something like that that I think AMC is just going to be doing over the month of October. So I'm not sure we're going to have too much time. I'll let you know the article is AMC releases brand new opening credits for Season 9 of The Walking Dead. Let me come down to the actual content. Eli Ross, History of Horror and Fear Fest. And we are back. So I'll read that to you at break number 2. Okay, guys, it's 9:13. We had a little bit of a bigger break this time. And I am going to go to 5.5. Joan's staying at 5.5, as she said she might. I kind of missed something in the beginning of the last scene. There was a woman wrapping rope and had her left hand with some of the fingers had been cut off. And I didn't catch whose hand that was. Joan, who often catches these things for me, was not quite sure. And then she notes separately, what had happened to the ethanol from the sanctuary, do you think? I really don't have any idea. I don't have any good theories for that one, to be honest with you. But that is a very good question, and it's probably one of the ones that is boiling up underneath why things are so tense right now. So, all right, it's 9:14, and we're going to have a couple of minutes. So let me continue reading the thing about the opening credits. So AMC released today, being last weekend, the brand new opening credit sequence for Season 9 of The Walking Dead. Regarding the stunning opener, executive producer and showrunner Angela Kang commented, "The opening credit sequence is indicative of the new look and feel to the world this season, and we wanted to give a nod to the show's graphic novel origin." And, you know, if you guys have seen the opening trailer, which I'm sure you have, it does look quite a bit like that. As we jump into a new chapter of the story, we wanted to present something fun and fresh for our viewers to reflect the changing landscape where nature will be playing a bigger role, Kang continues. While our survivors work to rebuild and adjust to the crumbling infrastructure, the threat of the dead is constantly looming. And true to the spirit of our show, there are Easter eggs for the fans to find if they're looking close. Last season brought the culmination of All Out War, which pitted Grimes and his group of survivors against the saviors and the cunning leader, Negan. Actually, this is a direct quote from something I read you guys earlier. And we have a trailer for a show that looks interesting, and I'm going to interrupt this for a moment to see what show this is. I have it muted, so Joan, if you happen to know ahead of me, it's a Netflix series. So it'll be episodes on Netflix, but I don't catch what it is yet. Very much, you know, horror thriller type thing. And it looks very interesting. I'm waiting for the title. Oh, The Haunting of Hill House. Okay, that'll be streaming available on Netflix. We're going to tour the commercial, so I'll go back to the article. But I'm going to skip that part that was in another article I just read you guys. Okay, so that actually, the article just quoted what was on AMC. So that's actually the end of that particular offering. So sorry, that particular article didn't really have a whole lot of meat on the bones. So let me go ahead and pull that one off. We're just noting that the opening credits have been redone and they're kind of interesting, and they harken back to previous seasons as well as the comic book origins of the show. And we have a thing on Talking Dead. I've told you guys he's going to be on. I'm going to go ahead and pull up the next article, but keeping an eye on the screen so I know when we go back to the live show. But this is going to be a cast interview from AMC.com. This one is a Q&A with Norman Reedus, and it was posted by Siobhan Bell, who does most of these, 6 days ago. So this one is brand new. And, oh, my God. There's like s'mores in a jar with Bailey's. That really looks like diabetes in a jar, but very delicious. Okay, let's see if Joan has anything she wants to add. Oh, Joan was asking, was it a woman? Yes, it was. The woman who had her hand cut might have been a former Sanctuary member because they cut the finger off that one girl was stealing back when Carol and Maggie were being held captive. She can't remember the episode. That is possible. And, you know, maybe that was just a reminder of some of the saviors that have been integrated into the larger group. But, yeah, it was a woman's hand. Okay, so Norman Reedus talking with AMC. Question, on the show, a year and a half has passed from season 8. How different did this season feel going into it? Oh, wow. They have a Pizza Hut commercial that looks like it's done up. Oh, it's for Halloween, but the way it was done up, it kind of looked like Jadis' old place. So Halloween is in theaters October 19th, and we're back. I'll see you guys at break number 3. Okay, guys, it is 9:28. We are at commercial break number 3, I think. Joan, feel free to correct me if I misremember that. Joan and I are of the same taste with this episode tonight, so we're both going up to 6. And let me grab the last couple of comments in between the last time we rated stuff. I had mentioned that the character of Tammy should get interesting, considering they brought in Brett Butler for it. Then again, I thought that Emma Caulfield's character, Tracy, oh God, what is her name on Fear? Tracy Otto was going to be a hell of a lot more interesting because they brought in Emma freaking Caulfield for it, and look what they did. So I really hope they learned their lesson from that and didn't bring Brett in for that kind of nonsense again. Joan has also added, maybe that's the opening for Maggie leaving but not dying. Georgie, the traveling record collector, wants Maggie to join her in her travels. And there was the herd that they mentioned earlier when they were doing those explosives. And I wasn't sure what the explosives are for, if those are for fixing things with the bridge or if they were to get the herd to go somewhere else. Not really clear on that. So anyway, Joan thinks we're on break number 3. So when I leave, then the next one will be number 4. That's fine. Let me bop over here to the interview with Norman Reedus. And we had the question, but we did not get to answer it before. It's 9:29, and we're still on commercials, so I'm going to go ahead and try to get that to you guys. So he says, it's completely different. It's still the same show, and there are all the elements of the show, but it's completely different tonally. It's like a Western. It's a train being driven by women, and I'm just standing on top of it, screaming my ass off. There's no chest bumping or good guy versus bad guy. It's very honest. It's complicated, and it's super emotional. We have a lot of new writers and directors who are all female, and it's really taken the show down an awesome turn. Question. The war is over, and the saviors are no longer in charge. What's it like for Daryl to be head of Sanctuary now? Answer. A lot of Daryl's story, especially in the first half, is with Rick and about being heard. Rick's making all these decisions for everybody that are blinded by grief. He's not really listening to the people around him. We've had seasons where people are blindly following Rick. He's done these great things, and he's our leader, but we don't really agree with his decisions. It's come to a point where people are standing up for themselves and doing what they think is right from an honest place. Daryl needs to make sure his voice is being heard. He loves Rick and understands why he's making these decisions, but he has to tell him that some of the things he's doing are not going to work. You see, in the first episode, that Daryl is leaving the sanctuary camp and these people don't want to be led. They're a bunch of rebels. They don't want to look to the future. Think about it. A person that joins a savior's camp is either forced to join that camp or take a cowardly approach in doing things for protection and food. They're joining a cult. They're not a bunch of heroes. They're cowards. No one wants to play. He doesn't want to be that guy anymore. Part of that is going, man, I tried it your way. I can't force things to grow in a factory. There's no soil here. Nothing is working. All right. We're still at commercial, so let me go ahead to the next one. Question, what does it mean to Daryl that Carol would take over at the sanctuary for him after he admits he doesn't want to be there anymore? Answer, Carol is very observant, especially when it comes to Daryl. She sees his struggle and takes over for him. That's who they are. They have always had each other's backs. Even when she says she's getting married, he says, man, that guy is corny, but if you're happy, I'm happy too. That's a maturity that Daryl hasn't had in previous seasons. Possibly before that, he might have been like, I'm going to kill this guy when she's not looking. That's a different Daryl who goes on during this season in different directions, even to the point of sort of a King Solomon decision maker. It's still Animal Planet out here, but it's an honest and mature Animal Planet. There are still these horrors of nature, but it's life. These two characters in particular know what that means. We are back. I'll see you guys at break number four. ...9:43 and we're just at break number four, so they've been getting increasingly long in between. That's fine. Let's get some scores up. I'm actually going to jump a little past Joan. She's at 6.5. I'm going to go to 6.75. Just that tension in the last scene really kind of did me in. Just in case I didn't mention this before, I can't remember. I was asking why they were doing that explosion. She says it was, Joan says she thinks it was to clear the rock slide, but it inadvertently rerouted the herd in the wrong direction, at least for now. Or really, it was the right direction, but they needed number two in order for it to work right, and number two never went off. Joan also mentions Tara still wears the sunglasses she was bringing for Denise before finding out Denise was dead a couple seasons ago. Also, Joan mentions people and ethanol are disappearing, possibly the next big bad group on the horizon. And I'm watching in the scene where, was it Aaron who got his arm mangled? I know the character. I know it's a main character. I'm kind of spazzing on the name, so if you can help me out, Joan, that would be appreciated. So he got his arm mangled by one of those really, really heavy logs crushing it. And so then they did the walker smashing by all the logs that were stacked up. He just unstacked them and, oh, the awful stuff with, and Sadiq is out, so it's just Enid trying to pull out a scene that reminds me quite a bit of the miniseries version of Stephen King's The Stand, where Molly Ringwald and a couple of other people are standing around trying to do surgery from a book, and none of them are surgeons. I think Enid at least has been trying to train with somebody who knows medical things. I'm not really sure. But she's literally looking at a book on surgery while she's getting ready to do this stuff. I would be absolutely poop my pants terrified. And, oh, Joan also mentions, oh, Daryl, haven't you learned by now not to cross Carol? Wrong woman, man. Well, I don't think he's going to cross her. He's just, he's all up in his shit, and he's right. That one savior's being a douchebag on purpose. So Joan's at 6.5, and I'm at 6.75, and it was Aaron. Poor Aaron, hope he makes it through the amputation, not ready to leave Ross Marquand just yet, damn it, Joan says. I don't think we're going to. I think this is something that I'm glad they're addressing. Walking Dead rewards tonight's code is Hilltop. Last week, they didn't have the damn code, and that really annoyed me. So if you go to twdrewards.com, if you do that program, which I try to, the password is Hilltop, one word. So enter that in and get the points. So I'm not sure. Well, we may not be back just yet, so let me go ahead and try to sneak in a little bit more article. So we're talking about Carol taking over for Daryl at Sanctuary. So he says, blah, blah, blah. Oh, okay, next question. Fans have been shipping Carol and Daryl forever. What was your reaction to their evolving friendship? Answer, I like the direction she and I are going. It's always about story first. Their bond is such a deep bond. I will say that if you ever read a script and things are going your way, you should watch your ass, he laughs. This show doesn't let people be happy for too long. If Carol is happy, Daryl is happy. That's the bottom line. That's a mature kind of love. Question, did you pull off any new pranks to send Andrew Lincoln off? Answer, Andrew who? He laughs. Andrew, it sounds familiar, but I can't remember. I think the last prank that we played with him, toilet paper in my car. But he did it while we were shooting a really heavy scene, and he told the base camp coordinator, toilet paper in my car. So when the scene was over, I came back to my car. He didn't do it himself. That's some cheap shit. He didn't even get his hands dirty. He got the last prank in, but he is definitely not winning this prank war at all. So that is the interview with Norman Reedus, and I'll go ahead and pull that off the list. And we are in a KFC commercial, so I don't know if I will have time to get up a next interview in time, but I will try to. It's 9:48, so I may not, but we'll see. So the next one is with Alana Masterson. Oh, the Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. We've got a trailer on for that, which means we're probably going to go back in a minute, because every time they do trailers for shows that are high suspense, it usually means we're about to go back. So I'm going to cue this up. And we are back, so I'll shut up. So see you guys at break number 5. Okay, guys, it's 9:56, but we're actually at break number 5, so we may be probably running over a tiny bit this episode. They didn't mention it specifically, but that has been their tendency anyway. So let's go ahead and get some scores up. I am actually, I'm hovering 6, 7, 5, or 7. I don't know. Because if I'm not sure, I'm just going to stay 6, 7, 5. Let's go ahead and get a score up when you get a chance, Joan, and I will grab our comments in between that and the last time we scored. Let's see. So we ended the last scene with having to amputate Aaron's arm, and we were, basically not ready to lose Roz Marcand. And he's raising that baby that they took from the Savior's compound after Rick's group killed her father and so forth. And I was saying, yay, that Maggie did a smart thing to go ahead and send food and stuff to help and prioritize getting everything in order. And that's one common theme in this genre in general, is realizing that in such a time, people have to survive. And that comes before all of it, or the rest has no meaning. And Jonah said she's got a point, and this was Maggie, about some people not being able to be reformed, though. And I agree with that. Gregory could not be reformed. I also mentioned the sassy savior that keeps getting into it with Daryl and Rick. That must be the Jed that I mentioned earlier. Mouthy little fucker. Okay, we're watching the Talking Dead couch. All right, and a commercial. And Joan has mentioned she has a feeling it won't be Gregory, just be Gregory either, that can't be redeemed. Yeah, we'll see. They've already talked about the next big villain group on last week's Talking Dead, so there's no secrets or spoilers now. And so in light of that, I did have those articles I sequestered. And since they've gone ahead and said it, I think next week I will go ahead and read those to you guys. And we're giggling over the last part. Joan had asked, do you think Anne and the priest are going to hook up? And I just mentioned, what is the sparkly thing bottom right of the screen? There was something going on they were calling a lot of attention to. But they ended up not using it, so I don't know what it was. I thought I heard walkers. And so I've given 6, 7, 5. Joan's at 6, 7, 5. And Joan has mentioned it has been officially brought up now. The next bad group are the Whisperers. It's been said. They openly named them and talked about them on Talking Dead, so they're coming in the near future. And that does have to do with the articles I've been holding out on. So next week I'll go ahead and read those to you guys. We have a Wasp and Ant-Man. Oh, it's just the Blu-ray is coming out Tuesday. Yeah, I need to go grab that. It's actually kind of cool. So let me unfreeze the scroll back. And so that is that, and now we know what's going on. So just to give you a slight teaser, Joan, and I hope this isn't a spoiler since you said it's already been mentioned. Since I've stayed away from the comics, is the Whisperers to do with characters named Alpha and Beta? Let me know, because those are to do with the articles that I've been withholding. out of not trying to do spoilers prematurely. So give me a chance. Let me know in the chat room. We're still in commercials, but because it's 9:59, I really don't want to start another article right now because I have a feeling we're going to have to pause that. So I'm really just stalling for time until we go back and finish off. Oh, they have the horror thing again, the commercial. It's kind of fun because they have a lot of zombie pictures. They have Shaun of the Dead stuff, and they have Day of the Dead. Oh, Fear Fest now through Halloween. We are back for the last little part, so I'll see you guys at the end break. Okay, guys, it's 10:06, so I will keep this short so you can watch The Talking Dead. I am ending on 7:25, and Joan is ending on 7:05. And let me grab the comments for you. So we had a big jump for the last scene. I think kind of like it. Joan has said, I haven't actually read the comics, but have had to research comparisons for stuff I've written in the past, so I know that much anyway. And yes, it is correct that the next people up are Alpha and Beta being part of the Whispers. This must be the part where Negan starts needling Rick again about being in charge. And then there was a helicopter hovering around. It's Jadis and her mystery copter. And Joan says, it looks like the Whispers are already on the scene, but just unseen, with people disappearing, Ethan all going missing, etc. And I also think that's what was up with Jed, that he has some connection to them, and that's part of why he's being surly. Like, he doesn't want to be all kumbaya because he's spying for them. That will probably be their lead-in. That is my theory. Anyway, I don't have any particular proof of that or anything. But let me let you go, and I will see you guys next weekend. Do not forget that the next episode is Warning Signs. It will be written by Channing Powell, and the director is Dan Liu, and that will be on October 21st. So I hope you guys can join me. And I appreciate you staying with us every week. So thanks, and see you next week.